Hey there, Fred DeLore here, and welcome back to On Background, where we peel back the layers of Canadian politics in an ever-so-casual way. This week, we're diving headfirst into the issue of caucus discipline, brought into the spotlight by none other than Liberal MP Ken MacDonald's pretty blatant attack on his own leader by calling for a leadership review. Now, Ken has changed his position pretty quickly, but not without embarrassing his leader and giving the opposition Conservatives more fun quotes to use in the next election. So this is a topic I know well, having had to deal with my share of MPs and candidates over the years who have strayed off message or decided to go against the team in some other way. But who better to navigate this conversation with me than Stevie O'Brien, currently with Macmillan Vantage and a former chief of staff in various ministries across Ottawa and Queen's Park, and legal counsel to the Liberal Party of Canada in several general elections. Stevie, thanks so much for coming on today.
Well, pleased to be here.
Look, I want to jump right into this. Ken MacDonald, what the f***?
Yeah. So definitely he's had some discontent with the party for a little while here. This wasn't the first sort of incident of him raising his head and criticizing the party. There was a few months ago with respect to the home heating piece. So we're definitely...
There's a great quote he gave us last in the fall saying people are losing faith, or people have lost faith with the Liberal Party of Canada. It's a beautiful quote as a Conservative that we're going to see in the next election.
And, you know, definitely feels like Ken MacDonald may have lost faith with the party perhaps a little bit, but I wouldn't, he shouldn't be speaking for the party more generally or the population more generally. So he's backtracking. I think it's definitely one of the things we're talking about here today is caucus discipline and how important it is and where should a leader draw the line.
Right, because I would have punted him or advocated for him to be punted last fall. If for to be that blatant, or at least announce his retirement plans.
Yep, and I'm wondering at the time. I suspect that there were, you know, maybe some conversations around that. But I mean, if you look back at Prime Minister Trudeau's record, no one has been kicked out of caucus for anything sort of short of bad touch, and you know, there's been a lot of room within the tent to have discussion, disagreement, to voice different opinions. And I think as part of in a large country within a party that has a large tent, you have to have an ability to have disagreement and to have different positions.
Right, because traditionally the Liberal Party of Canada was a big tent, the big tent of the country in terms of all the political parties where you would have the most divergent views. That seems to have shifted in the last few years with the more tilt to the left. This, you know, you can may disagree with that, but I believe
I think we're still quite the big tent party.
I'm not so sure. I think you've abandoned the middle and the right, but you kicked SOCONs out, basically.
Kicked the SOCONs out. A big tent for all but.
Yeah. Right, right, right. So it's interesting, the approach now. And I get, like... From what I've heard, the way the Liberal Party is now in terms of internally and how it functions, it doesn't seem there's actually a lot of steam allowed to be blown off internally at caucus meetings. I'm obviously not in those rooms, and you're not either. But it feels like this may be the only way Ken felt he could get his thoughts out there. Because for what I'm and I could be way off on this, but from what I understand, basically you have to... before you go to caucus meetings, you need to get on a list before you can ask questions. Where at the Conservative Party, they're all at wars in our caucus meetings. There's a lot of discussion that happens there. But outside of that, it tends to be more
a liberal caucus meeting is not a well-organized, scripted event.
So it is a free-for-all as well?
I think it's probably a little bit. They attempt to bring a level of order to the proceedings to allow fairness.
Right.
I think otherwise you have the three or four, the handful of loudest, grumpiest MPs getting the floor all the time. And at least when you have a list and allow some sort of division of time and you make sure that you're up there, that someone who might be a quieter, were not so, you know, not the screaming, angry type to get their chance to speak to the group as well. So I'm actually okay with somewhat of a sign-up sheet. But the meetings run long. People do get their chance to speak. You're not vetted on who gets to go on the list.
It's right. If you want to speak, you can.
Correct.
There's no, okay.
It's more of a first come, first serve type thing. To get up to have some order and to allow different voices within the broad tent to be heard.
Right.
But I would say, so, you know, Mr. McDonald should have had an opportunity to voice his disagreements within caucus. I can't say whether he did or he didn't. That would have been and should have been his first sort of avenue. He could have talked to other even outside of the formal caucus meeting. There are other avenues to speak within the party. There are avenues, and the Prime Minister has been very clear about saying he has an open door. He'll talk to members. He can get in touch with him or speak to PMO. What I think we're seeing a little bit of, Ken and others, is it's not the happiest caucus within the last 8 years.
Right. Which is natural when you're 8 or 9 years into a government, but also 15 points back in the polls.
Both of those points, exactly. Yeah. It is much easier to have caucus discipline when you are winning, when you're at the top of the polls.
I've lived through all of that on
and
both sides.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'd say in 2015, caucus discipline was very much, it was much easier, and now you're having a bit more splintering. You've got people worried about the future, about the next election, about their own personal careers, about having to go back to the ridings. They're hunkering down, so it is harder to maybe get everyone to speak with one voice.
Right. With Ken, it's interesting because I think there's been three instances now, though, where he's gone out and taken pretty blatant shots, and some people, I've heard some people say, oh, they think he's positioning to run provincially, or he's not going to run again. And like, if I was running the provincial Liberals, I would have no interest in this guy on my team. So I remain surprised that he's still here and a part of caucus, knowing at the same time it would obviously throw a lot of fuel on the fire if the Prime Minister was to throw out a caucus member. And so I guess that's my next point. The way the Liberal Party structured, it's the Prime Minister, the leader of the party, who decides, right? If he wanted to toss Ken, there's no other mechanism, is there? They don't have the Reform Act that
the Reform Act is available to everyone.
Right,
but the party has not yet chosen to adopt it after the last couple of elections. So it does remain, I believe, I don't want to be quoted on knowing the rules like the back of my hand.
I know it well because
think that there's another mechanism by which...
As Aaron O'Toole's campaign manager, I know the Reform Act very well. And so,
but I'm talking within the Liberal Constitution. I'm not sure if there are other
separate
pieces, but I believe it is within the Prime Minister's prerogative. He has taken advice. I think he has been thoughtful in the past when it's come to other members of caucus who have been removed or have been asked to step down, either permanently or temporarily. It has been done usually in consultation with, if not cabinet, then with other close advisors.
Right. We would have his inner circle, right?
And his inner circle and others. And I think sometimes the opinions of caucus are sought as well, even if they aren't the deciding factor. People will weigh in on whether or not where their position is, and he'd be open to listening to that as well.
He did throw out a lot of caucus members, Mr. Trudeau did, when he evicted the entire Senate, right? Which was what, half or more than half, I think, of the Liberal caucus at the time. Going back to the Harper years, there's no question Harper had a certain discipline that worked well. And when people strayed from that, we would remove them from caucus. And we did, I think it put this, like right now, if I'm a Liberal, it feels like Ken, you can get away with things because Ken said this, if you want to challenge your leader. Same time, we're going into an election soon. So if you're thinking of running again, probably not a good idea to damage your own brand. But that's exactly what Ken's been doing. And I'm curious if we'll see other Liberals.
So I think caucus discipline is a necessary part of the Canadian political tradition. But where that line is drawn is an art and not a science. And it changes depending on the personality of the particular leader, the culture amongst caucus that they are aiming for or they are trying to build, and different styles work for different leaders. So,
right.
You know, I think Prime Minister Trudeau is trying to hit a very open tent, you know, not being as lenient with the caucus discipline as possible, within a framework that has certain, I think there are still certain no-go areas. Where he clearly has not made that is taking pot shots at the leader doesn't seem to be the line in the sand that Prime Minister Harper would have drawn. But I think with the Prime Minister, there are more things with respect to your position on the charter, LGBTQ rights,
right.
Federalism.
Value-based.
Value-based there. Like, this is what it means to be a liberal. Are you still within these broad strokes that we have said you are? Then you can be within the party and there can be discontent. I think another area that we've seen... So Nate Erskine-Smith is often
right.
voted against the party.
And then tried to lead another party, which just boggled my mind how that would ever work.
But you know what? It was tolerated, not beyond tolerated. It was sort of in some corners, I'd say even embraced. That was part of like, look at us. We were sort of pat on our back. We were allowing this level of
craziness.
Opposition.
Sorry, opposition.
of someone to being able to speak their mind. We MPs come. They're representing their constituents. Who are we to say that they can't say what's important to them? But there is a box, and one of the things that Nate never did was vote against the government on something that was a confidence motion. He never
right.
voted in any, or he never his opposition to government policy never jeopardized the longevity of the government.
Right.
And you could maybe draw a bit of a parallel here with Ken. He's calling on a leadership review, or he may be questioning the leadership of the Prime Minister, but he has no mechanism there. There's no actual threat. He's not. Triggering anything. He knows that himself. There's no mechanism by which he can do these things. The Prime Minister is confident that he is not going to have, there's not going to be a leadership review. He knows he's going into the next election. So it is something that he can kind of let go and let somebody
right.
Voice their opinion.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've watched these all of Ken's clips very closely, with great interest. Again, as a conservative, but also just as a political junkie, and I just don't think Ken knows what he's actually talking about. I think you put a mic in his face and he just talks. I don't think there's any intent to try to take out the leader. That's my sense from Ken.
Another one you didn't mention who was interesting for me that didn't. You know, if we're talking values-based and why were they allowed to remain within caucus, it's Joel Lightbound and his comments about supporting, you know, that the Prime Minister or that the government's actions during the convoy divisive or dividing the country. And he was still allowed to stay. But it wasn't without consequence. He was no longer a parliamentary secretary. I think that's another line here that is a... important distinction, right? There's a difference between what you're allowed to say as a caucus member and what you are allowed to say as a representative of government.
Right.
And criticizing the government when you are, you know, a parliamentary secretary or a minister is a much more serious offense than if you are the member of parliament for, you know, riding in, you know, any particular riding.
Right. So he was stripped of his of that almost immediately, right? His parliamentary secretary position.
I'm going to be a little bit fuzzy on my
I
don't want to say immediate, but yeah, I believe so. That was not he wasn't allowed to continue in that. And this was an individual who I think at some point we were looking towards future finance minister. He
wow.
was on a quite the trajectory. So it's not without consequence to speak without it, but there are carrots and sticks that the party has that are more than just being in or out of caucus.
Right. And I remember thinking of Michael Chong right now. Funny, the creator of the Reform Act, right? He authored it,
mm-hmm.
which allows parties to their very first caucus meeting after an election to decide whether they want to use it during that parliament, whether they use it where caucus has to vote to remove a caucus member or caucus has to vote to remove a leader, which was funny because he was a big supporter of Aaron O'Toole, which was the mechanism used to remove him. So it was a bit ironic. But when Michael Chong was a cabinet minister under Harper, he voted against the government on Quebec as a Nation motion. Mm-hmm. He was Minister of Intergovernmental Affairs, wasn't a part of the discussions and wasn't happy with how that went. So he didn't agree with it. So he voted against it. He was removed from cabinet. That was what obviously a big, you know, that was very early on in our government. I think in the first year, we were in one of the longest running governments in Canadian history, and he did not get to be a part of that anymore because he went against the leader on a big, and the team really. This is a team sport, and I think that's a big part of this. And when I see there's so many of us that play this game that are in politics. Our team players. Mm-hmm. We work with our team. Obviously, you and I are on opposing teams, but it takes two to play a game, right? And I'm not trying to diminish politics as a game, but it's just an easy analogy. So when you're going against your team, you're hurting everybody around you. So that's one of the things with caucus discipline and why it's so important. It's interesting right now with Poilievre being so far up in the polls, I can see it in the Conservative caucus, how disciplined they are message-wise as well. All of them are pretty well singing from the same songbook. There will be differences here and there that pop up, but you see them promoting their messages aggressively.
The caucus discipline is, it does seem to be quite absolute. I'm thinking yesterday there seemed to be a moratorium on speaking about anything that Danielle Smith had to say. It was like a complete silence. Now, you know that people had opinions, but it was a bit more, I'd say, the style of Harper, in a sort of a blanket silence, no one speaks, and, you know, we are not commenting on this. And I understand the politics behind that, because I'm sure there were liberals with tape recorders out there following every member around to see if, or not everyone, but the usual suspects, to see if they could get them to say something on the record.
Right.
And that's, I mean, not to say that the Liberal government hasn't done similar sort of blanket prohibitions on speaking. I'm thinking back to Trump and NAFTA number one.
Right.
There was a lot of caucus discipline right at the very beginning days of the Trump administration about, we need to renegotiate NAFTA. We need to be careful here. We are not going to go off. And now that's more than caucus discipline. That's more sort of caucus discipline meets international relations. But,
right. But still being disciplined and being that team player where you have to understand, if you say something, that will be perceived as the Liberal take on the issue. In my experience, conservatives are most successful when they're disciplined, when they can keep to a tight message and you don't have people going off. Because the Conservative Party is a big coalition as well. You talk about the Liberal Party being a big tent. We're a big tent. It's a different tent, and it's got different players in it. And there's some that some of our views and values that certain people have work well, and some don't. Some are off-putting to a lot of people, and dangerous in terms of turning away voters. So there needs to be, if you're going to be running for this party, you have to understand that, you know, the leader's message is what you need to follow.
Yeah, if I was advising Mr. Poilievre, I'd say talk only about affordability and housing and nothing else. And we would, if I was advising
guess
the
what?
Other side,
yeah.
if I was
advising
the other
exactly
side, I'd
doing.
Say get him to talk about the convoy and vaccines
right.
and cryptocurrency and trans children and parental rights, and let's go down that and abortion and try and get the conversation to go there. So I can completely understand why he is trying to maintain a very strict caucus discipline with respect to messaging and voting, I would imagine, on all of these
right.
issues.
Well, just on the convoy thing, last week there was a big issue where the court ruled that, you know, the Emergency Act was, not like yourself, not a lawyer, so I'm not going to get these words right, but it was wrong to, or the Liberals didn't have a justified reason to use the Emergencies Act. The Conservatives were, you had some people come out quickly, say a few things, and then they went dark on it. They made their point. They didn't need to keep on this, right? Because it's about, and it's not just about keeping the things that turn off some voters. It's also just going on what are the hot issues. It's discipline on that as well, right? It's mm-hmm. about, it's not just the shield, it's the sword. Go on what the top issues are that resonates, that breaks into those demographics that could be open to voting for us for the first time. Like, we're, the conservatives are leading in youth. They're leading in some parts of the country in women vote. Like, they're doing something that hasn't happened in a long time. And I think it is a lot of the discipline, the caucus discipline on the messaging that does that.
And it's easier to jump behind and support the messaging when you see your boss rising in the polls, when you see the opportunity of perhaps entering cabinet, when you see the
carrots
chance
sticks,
that you are going 100%, that you might be getting a promotion or a big portfolio, or you could get, you know, then I'm like, you're going to fall in line. When perhaps since the last cabinet shuffle, many people have you know, many members of caucus have said, okay, well, I'm never going to get in cabinet now. I'm not sure I'm even going to run again. I'm not sure what the future is going to be. You know what? You start becoming a little, it's a little bit harder to keep all of those individuals in line and on the same message. They may start disagreeing. They may start thinking about, you know, like, can a leadership review or whatnot. So it is a challenge for the Prime Minister and the Prime Minister's office to keep caucus unified and on the same page.
It's interesting with caucus discipline, looking at other countries. In the United Kingdom, same system as ours, they don't really have caucus discipline. They have people shooting at each other all the time, taking shots regularly. So it's funny that Canada has this. And then the U.S., where we steal a lot of our policy, like, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we have in our constitution, it's election every 5 years. All of a sudden, it's 4 years. We've adopted this Americanized system in so many ways, except for discipline, right? In the U.S., you're wide open primaries. There is no mechanism to remove. George Santos was kicked out of Congress. He was still a Republican when he was kicked out. There was no mechanism to remove him from the party. So it's interesting to see how Canada is quite unique in many ways.
Yeah,
in Western democracies, anyway.
I can't remember who said it, and was said a while ago, but like a Canadian prime minister with a majority government is like the most powerful leader of a parliamentary system.
Right.
In the world, because
right.
of the because of the extent of our caucus discipline. And I sort of said it before, I still think it's a necessary part of the Canadian political tradition. And I think that, like,
why is it
the
necessary?
The chaos that exists even in this system with the level of discipline that we have, the chaos and the challenge of herding cats, particularly in a minority government. I couldn't imagine
right,
what it would
another,
be like.
Whole other game, right?
I couldn't imagine what it would be like without it. Right, like, it's hard enough to get everybody whipped and in their seats and doing the right thing with this expected level and with the carrots and stick system that exists. If that didn't exist and everyone could go off on their own, I think we would devolve into multi parties. It would be very hard time to get to get anything through the House,
right?
To be honest.
And I guess, it's partially because we are a blend of the UK and American systems, where party members choose their leaders, and typically that leader's in place until they lose an election. But it's only the members that can remove them. Then they still have a review to go through. Typically, that's not always the case. But in the UK, like, we had three prime ministers in 1 year. Three Conservative Party leaders, because the caucus can also put more discipline on the leader. Now, federally, we've had that issue with Aaron O'Toole, where the Conservatives did...
Which is a relatively new act and a relatively new...
Right. It was the first time... The last election was the first time any party invoked the Reform Act that actually allowed to use it. It was after the election night loss. Mm-hmm. Aaron O'Toole went to caucus and said he wants to invoke it, so that if caucus does want to remove, they have that ability to do so.
I wonder what it would be like if that hadn't happened, because I think there was a bit of trigger happiness a little bit there. But I mean, he would be quite the contender, I think, right now. I know Polyev is...
Yeah, well, Polyev's doing fine. but yes, I would agree, obviously, that Aaron would be doing very well as well. So right now, the Conservative Party is obviously, they're very united, very focused. They're all singing from the same songbook. If the Liberals, and I think it's on the Liberals to figure out their own narrative and messaging and start actually punching back if they want to get into this game again. But if they do, and if the polls tighten up, I think we're going to see, or I'm curious what your point is, like, will we see caucus discipline become an issue? Because it is not an issue right now with Polyev, But what's your sense as an outsider looking in?
I think there's a big risk that I hope the Liberals are ready to pounce on and exploit when it happens. So Polyev is doing very well in the polls. The party is doing very, very well. An election is potentially still a ways off. Polls do not always go up. Even if he is going to win the next election, the likelihood that they're going to dip at some point between now and then, and maybe rise up again, they are not static things. What will the caucus do when they're faced with their first dip, when it looks like when the Liberals have their next sort of win, success?
A series of news stories too that are part of it, right?
Exactly.
Start second guessing what's happening there. What's the strategy?
When the Liberals start pulling out all of the Oppo research that they are hopefully sitting on.
It doesn't exist, but go on.
I think it does. But when it starts coming out, what are they going to do? And that's going to be a real testament to his leadership and the trust that he's built with caucus. And if I was him right now, I wouldn't be sitting on my laurels, just resting, thinking that that I have caucus in the bag. I'd be building friendships. I would be supporting. Right. And I think you're kind of seeing him do that.
He's going to lots of ridings.
Yeah. He's supporting people. He's helping fundraise for individuals. And that's the smart thing to be doing, so that you can build some resiliency when things get bumpy.
Yeah. I think he... As we know, if you look through history, conservatives and modern history anyway, we eat our leaders if they don't win the election. Because everyone we talk to hates the Liberals and hates Trudeau and think he needs to go, and are stunned when it doesn't happen, not realizing maybe we're just talking to our own people all the time. I think he is doing that work now. Now, I think he's going to win the next election, but I think he's also doing that work that if it doesn't work out, he still has that. And even if he does win the election, he still needs to keep these people on the team. You can't have a Ken McDonald going out and saying, you know, people are losing faith in the party.
If he wins, he does not want to be if he wins a minority, or even if he wins a majority, he's not going to want it to be a one term. He's going to have to maintain that caucus discipline. He's going to have to maintain, because there are elements within the party that are saying those things that are off brand, off putting, that are not going to speak to the 905 or to those other parts of the country that he's really trying to branch into and bring into the conservative tent.
Right.
And Liberal Politics 101 is to sort of shine light on those elements and try and...
Right, that's how you win campaigns, right? Is you get aggressive and you try to...
We bring Bill Blair out, he talks about gun control, and then we win.
You had to go there, eh? Okay.
I think there is an element where the media likes to sensationalize caucus disagreements, and they maybe blow them out of proportion.
Right.
And they love the story that somebody speaks out against a leader, the leader is weak. All of a sudden... party in crisis. There's going to be a leadership. I mean, we've heard that story and the names they keep trotting out about the next Liberal leader so many times. And I think that's not really coming from within the party. That's coming from, some elements of the media that would love to just have that conversation.
It's a very easy story to write. It's a fun story to read. And as an opposition, member of an opposition party, it's an easy one to keep pushing, right? Like,
and it's fun armchair politics for any politico to sit back and like, just like when there's a cabinet shuffle and you sit back and do your fantasy cabinet, team, and you do your fantasy leadership. But that doesn't mean there's a massive division within Liberal caucus. I really don't think that there is. Talking to many caucus members and cabinet ministers in the fall and around Christmas, they felt really unified, especially after the midnight voting session.
Right.
It had the sort of reverse sort of decision, but they came out of it feeling on fire. They felt brought together. There was something
there. You could
see
their body language in the House, right? They felt alive again for the first time in a while.
100% they did. So I wouldn't say there's this like... there are all these stories about trouble in paradise, or that there's something rotten in the state of Denmark. Is not true. It's the party, they genuinely, they are mostly friends, and they are really still trying to achieve the right thing, and mostly going into the next election thinking that they are bringing the right values and the right message to Canadians, and they need to work on their communications, and they will still prevail. So I think a little bit of it is it's a bit sensationalized.
Right. Again, fun stories to tell and read. But you're right. At the end of the day, you know, caucus, I think a lot of them, from what I gather, understand that there was 35 of them when Mr. Trudeau ran his first election, right? And he's won, brought them to majority. They were on their deathbed, brought them to majority, and has been reelected twice.
He is the best campaigner that the party has by far. He is very good, and he... I'd say
terrible at governing, great at campaigning.
We're not going to agree on that point, but he does look like he's got a bit more of his old fire and spring in his step in 2024. I think 2023 was a hard year all round,
right?
And coming out of COVID was a hard time all round, and he seems more like his old self than he has since maybe the first mandate.
I'd say it's interesting to watching Poilievre and Trudeau daily. I see that every day with Poilievre. Every day he has energy. Every day he's out doing it. I find one of the things with Trudeau, and I know he has the burden of governing. He's got to govern a country. It's a different thing. Poilievre can wake up every day and say, how am I going to mess with Trudeau and do something? But I find with Trudeau, it feels like it's once a week or once every 2 weeks that he shows me that he's that fired up guy. So it's this weird, like, where, you know.
Well, he's got the burden of a war in the Middle East, of another Trump administration. He's got, you know, a lot of the burden of knowing all of the scary things that are happening. And
right.
So it's, I think despite all of that, he's got an impressive spring in his step.
And when it comes to election time, that's 36 days of equal footing. Where they're all go. Yeah. So that's when this is going to be.
I wonder how long it's going to be, because the last Harper election was what?
70 some days.
That would be hard to keep spring in your
step. Are you
step.
Giving us a hint here or something?
I have no, I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what the strategy would be there. I don't think you can. Although in fairness, because it's all, I mean, if we get into 2025, we will have be going close to a fixed election day, which means whether it's officially 77 days or not, come summertime, we are effectively campaigning.
Well, that's what Harper did. He dropped a month early, he dropped the writ in 2015.
You'll even know a month before that it's going to effectively be campaigning too.
Right. In my experience as a conservative, the longer the campaign, the worse for us. We wear out. There's something that always happens. Those last 3 days are always terrible for us.
Saying we should have, what's the maximum length here that we can, good to know.
Yeah. So if you guys
listen,
out,
if you're listening.
If you guys aren't aware of this already, then I'm not sure what's going on. But in the last two elections, we were internally leading or close to leading, and the last 3 days it fell apart.
To pull this back to our topic, sometimes that's because they lose control of the messaging.
Right.
And that they have people going out and saying things, and they have that gets spun, or they are off message, or you've speaking to particular niche.
Well, you guys jammed us very, very well last election when you came out and announced a mandate. You brought in the vaccine mandates right before the election. Beautiful political ploy. I'm not saying it's good policy, but great political ploy, which is what it was. And it really jammed us. We had a lot of caucus upset with it. The vast majority of Canadians were in favor of mandates. There was nothing we could do. If Erin O'Toole had gone out and campaigned against mandates, we would have 70, 80 seats, not 117. We would have got crushed right out of the gate. So it put us in a really tough jam. And throughout the campaign, we were able to ride it. It was the last week when COVID spiked again. And then the Globe and Mail did a story on, on vaccines, how many caucus was vaccinated, and it was just a mess. And then Jason Kenney closed down Alberta Thursday night, 4 days before Election Day, 3 days before, and our numbers just plummeted in those few days. So yeah, it's.
I'm really
curious what the next wedge issue is you guys are going to come up with, because I know on the Saturday or Sunday before the writ drops, there's going to be something that comes out of nowhere, and we're going to have to deal with for 36 days.
I wish I knew too, but
I don't even know if the Liberals know that yet. But
they'll be looking for it 100%. And I mean, I'm just speculating, but the election is going to be in. Either at the same time as or in the wake of the presidential election in the U.S.
Right.
So look, and the prime minister has already signaled that he's looking to tie the way he talks about MAGNA conservatives. And he's we're going to be tying and looking for opportunities to tie the Polyev administration and campaign team to the Trump. So I think we don't know what that wedge issue will be. I think we will find it south of the border.
Right. And I do think Polyev and his team are well aware of this, Pierre and his group, and they're going to be preparing for whatever it is, and they're going to be...
How do you prepare for Trump, though? It's going to be, I mean, it's going to be very difficult. Great. He could say anything.
No question. But they know this, and that's they're going to have to instill as much caucus and candidate discipline as possible. That's their only path if they do that. Because you're right, if they don't have that plan, and if you guys go around that time or in the wake of it, if Trump is president, there's a lot of stuff that could happen that could throw the conservatives off course. So it's
going to be that base that they are trying to attract, those sort of the 905 or the whatever that are maybe not going to be so receptive to some of Trump's messaging, that may be afraid of a repeat performance up here.
Right. Okay. Well, look, this was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. Really thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. It was a really very disciplined chat. We stayed on focus.
Absolutely. I stayed on message. You stayed on message.
A little bit. I stray a bit. I tend to do that. But thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, folks, thanks so much for listening to On Background. This was a really fun chat about caucus discipline. And be disciplined yourself. And don't forget to subscribe and share this to friends. And tune in next week when we come to you with a brand new episode of On Background.